Well, next is now the fun, exciting part, because actually it is the panel that we came for today, and it's on a coming out panel. But before we ask the panelists to come up, I just kind of remind us a bit of what it's all about and why we're doing it in this month of October. Most of you probably know, if you read the newsletter, Byron wrote about it in the very first article on the top of the page. But it's National Coming Out Day is every October 11th, which is right around the corner. And it marks the anniversary of the second major national march on Washington for lesbian and gay rights that took place in 1987. After that, it was decided, you know, these people came together. Let's actually find something to do that and memorialize that. And just like the coming out story project I just mentioned, same thing. It's a chance to share for the community of the larger world of what the stories are, and to inspire those and to honor those that have come out. And to do that provides a platform. And as I said, especially in light of today's, in my opinion, the anti-LGBTQ plus legislation and banning books and other things like that, it's more important than ever to get these stories out there so they can be heard and understood and inspire folks to action to do that. So now if our panelists could come forward, please, and find an appropriate seat up here for you. We have Hillary Gardner, Max Mowitz, David Nairt, and Mike Triggs. They'll briefly introduce themselves, tell some of their story that they think is important to share with you. And the intent is just to be interactive, not just them talking to you, but they're going to tell the story. And then Jim has the mic. And if you have questions, engage with them, ask questions. If not, I've got some prompts to keep it going. And they may talk amongst themselves as well. So it's to be interactive, inspirational, probably going to be some tears involved, some laughter. I hope it's going to be just a fantastic, great time. Any questions before we start? So we'll start here with, since David is closest to me, there's a microphone on the floor there that you have to share between your chairs on your left there. And you probably have to turn it on. And I've just asked you, David, to introduce yourself and part of your story you think is important for us to know.
Hello, everyone. My name is David Nairt. I am originally from East Moline, Illinois. That's where I grew up. In the Quad Cities there, and I did go to 13 years of Catholic school over there. That's, I was raised in a very Catholic Republican family out there in Western Illinois. I did move to Iowa 7 years ago, to the day. It was October of 2016. And then, yeah, I now live in Urbandale with my fiance, Rich Rumsey. He's back there. and I work in finance for a agriculture company in Ames, Iowa now. And I've just loved living here. So as part of my story, after I graduated high school, I moved to Normal, Illinois, where I went to Illinois State University, and I did come out as a junior in college when I was 21 years old. So that was about 12 years ago. And I remember I was driving from Moline, Illinois to Normal, Illinois, and I was just thinking, and suddenly it was like I just stopped denying myself, and tears came, and I just said, I'm gonna go tell my best friend when I get here tonight that I'm gay, and it's gonna be great. So when I was growing up, it was a lot of denying myself. It was a lot of praying not to be gay, please don't be gay. It was a lot of that. It was very difficult. And then when I came out, the first kind of reactions from people were very positive, but I do remember my father saying things like, well, you need to transfer schools, you need new friends, you need to find a different place to be located at, because that's all been affecting you, things like that. But he came around very quickly and it was all good. But I think for me, one thing is, I think we never stop coming out, like you just said. And 12 years ago, you know, I came out, but it was very like, oh yes, family, friends, I'm gay, but I'm still like you. Like, I still want to do all the things that are normal in society and don't worry about that. And now I'm finding myself 10 years, 12 years later, being just not caring anymore and wanting to live the best gay life that I can and not worry about heteronormativity at all. So that's my story so far.
I'm Hillary Gardner, and I've been in the Des Moines area most of my adult life, and I'm from Iowa. I don't have a really coming out story per se. Mine is kind of tied to my child. I, in my 20s and 30s, had, in my 50s, had dipped my toe into some queer relationships here and there, but I lived a very hetero life, married to men, have children, and kind of fit in that box of trying to be the perfect mom and wife and all the stuff that we put on ourselves. And my child decided to, my oldest child is 24 now, decided to leave Iowa to go to school in on the East Coast. And I had a feeling they were queer. I just wasn't quite sure. And they came out after they left, and they had to leave here. They had to leave home to be able to come out and feel safe. And when that happened, I'll get very emotional. When that happened, I decided as a mom that will never happen again on my watch in Iowa. No child will ever have to leave home to come out to feel safe. So I decided to engross myself into any kind of advocacy or work for the community that I could do. And I'm in year six of that. And that kind of brought me to, I was always the garden girl, you know, with my gay guy friends all throughout my adult life. And that kind of just brought me to, hey, this is the life for me. This is where I'm most comfortable. And I have had a partner for several years. And so my story is tied to my child, and I don't have to come out. I'm a middle-aged white woman that walks into any room and feels safe. I never walk in and shrink myself ever. And that's not the case for so many people that I see and work with and surround myself with. So my coming out is really tied to that. And I feel like where I sit and my role and how I move through the world is so important for those people that are younger than me or even sitting beside me that can't do it. I don't ever want to speak for them, but being visible and loud, because I'm a little bit opinionated, is so important for them to see, hey, I'm moving through the world and you're okay, and I'm going to be sure that you're safe and you're never going to have to leave home to feel like you belong in our community. So I don't have this story. I tie it to Sophie all the time, and I think it's actually Dan Jansen is the one who told me what you're living in your story as a mom is really important, and you have to tell it, and so other people can kind of see that and mirror it. So that's my story.
We get to share. Can y'all hear me okay? Sounds like you can. Okay. Well, you all saw me like very ungracefully get onto this chair. So we're all friends now. Like we've been through it together. I was like, wow, I'm really up here. So my name is Max Moitz. My pronouns are they and he. I'm the program director at One Iowa. I'm a founding board member of the Iowa Trans Mutual Aid Fund, and I act as a transition and abortion doula in my free time. And I'm really excited to share space with you all today and share a little bit about my experience. I'm actually doing the work that I do here in Des Moines, and almost all of my coming out stories are kind of a full circle experience and event. So I actually grew up a block away from here. I now live in that house as an adult. That's a long story. It's not related to what we have to talk about today. But I live in the house that I grew up. And when I came out in high school, I was kind of pushed out. So I came out in high school at 17. as a lesbian. And honestly, this really goes through a pattern of me being entirely clueless until having like this magnificent snap moment, which I'll explain in a second. But I was, 16 or 17, and I was chatting with what I thought was just like a very, very good friend. We spent all of our time together and hung out together all the time and held hands. But I was like, wow, we're just like really great friends. I love this. And she's like, we're dating. I was like, what does that, but I'm straight. Wait, what does that make me? and then I had like what I love to call a snap moment. And there's a lot of those. I first learned about a snap moment when I went and visited the Gay Museum in Berlin. And the idea is that you go through your life either suppressing or ignoring parts of yourself until you have this really, really clear moment of like, oh shit. and that's what I had that night, right? And she was like, we're fully dating. What are you talking about? And I was like, all right, I'm gay now, huh? So I came out at that time. I started doing right? Isn't that so fun how that happens? I started doing LGBTQ advocacy work. That's how I met lovely Tyler. And then, I'm so happy all the time to get to come back to the first Friday Breakfast Club because I was one of your scholars back in 2011. The money worked. Let's say I came back to do LGBTQ advocacy work. So it's happening. So I came out as a lesbian. I spent, several years doing advocacy work. And then I had another snap moment. This one was not as life shaking, but I met my now husband, Austin. And we were RAs in the dorm together. And again, this was just one of those things where I was like, I'm just going to ignore this. Like, I'm not really into men. It's fine. I'm not going to think about it. I'm a lesbian. And again, over and over and over, I could not ignore it. Right. And so at that time was when I realized that I was probably close to bisexual, and that's still how I identify today. But the most exciting coming out that I've ever had was when I came out as trans about 5 years ago in June of 2018. Math. That was a really interesting time. So I came out as transmasculine, non-binary. I identify as like trans or transmasculine now. And this was also another snap moment. This was an interesting one. I was like in the Hy-Vee bread aisle. I was like, what? At least somebody didn't have to tell me this, but I was like, I'm not a woman, huh? Okay. All right. We went through kind of the season of that and coming out that way, which is why, like I said, there's so many full circle moments. I volunteered with One Iowa when I was, before I knew I was gay. Now I work here. I live in the house I grew up in. So often I see other people in the city of Des Moines. Some of you might be them who watched me grow up at watch me grow up as Sarah and now are like, wait, you're Max? What's going on? I still have neighbors that don't know. They're like, how you doing, Sarah? And I'm like, you know what? I'm fine. No big deal. Let's keep moving, right? So getting to come out many, many times has been wonderful. I think coming out as trans was the most challenging for me in terms of my family dynamics. But it was also the one that was the most of a gift to myself. So I'm really happy to be able to come here and share with you all, because I do really see Des Moines as a space where my queerness has always been fostered. A lot of you, are a part of that. And so I'm so happy to live here and be here and to live as my authentic self here in Des Moines. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
Closet that was so well appointed, and I had been working in politics for most of my early life. I worked for Governor Bob Ray, for First President Bush, was executive director of the Minnesota Republican Party, and then went to work for a governor in Minnesota. And I was managing the governor's campaign when a member of the press came to me and said, we have this list that the governor's primary opponent has been circulating, and we wanted a quote from you about the list. And so I said, well, show me the list. And I looked down, and it's a list of 25 gays and lesbians that are close to the governor. My name was number one on the list. I had never acted on my sexuality at that point. And so I told the reporter to get the hell out of here, out of my office. And the first thing I did was to call the governor's primary opponent. And I said that I see this list that you've been circulating. And he said, I told him that if it ends up in the press, that he's going to be in court. And he said, well, Mike, everybody knows you're a snappy dresser. And he said, you always wear bow ties and your shoes are always shined. And I've heard that you pay $50 for haircuts. And I've heard on some very good authority that you do needlepoint. And I had to respond by saying, well, your standards, I guess I'm guilty on all counts, but that doesn't necessarily make someone gay. And so I hung up the phone, and for the next 3 weeks, the opponent's list started to be passed around Republican and Democratic circles. Everybody was talking about the list. The press had assured me that they thought it was sleazy. They weren't going to use it. And I was on pins and needles for those 3 weeks. And I came into work one morning, and the governor's campaign chairman was there in the office. And he said that, Mike, you've become a distraction because of this list that's being circulated. And we think that you need to fall on your sword and leave the campaign. I was just stunned. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Being the good soldier that I was, I accepted his suggestion and left the campaign. They put out a press release saying that I was leaving the campaign for health reasons. It was 1992, and now I'm a gay man in everyone's mind. And everyone assumes that I have AIDS. And so I had the most difficult time finding other work in the Republican Party because everybody assumed that I was a gay man. So I went to work and was a contract lobbyist for Planned Parenthood and for four sessions at the Minnesota legislature. And in the meantime, I've started working part-time at Nordstrom. And I have been working in retail ever since. I worked for Nordstrom, worked for the Phoenician Resort, and ran a boutique there. And now for the last 11 years have been at Von Maur. Many of you, I have had an opportunity to sell things to you. And David was telling me today that he was thinking about wearing the coat that I have that I sold him. And but fortunately he didn't. So anyway, that's my story. I have recorded my story in my book that I had published earlier this year. It's called You Can't Make This Shit Up. And the book is available, if I can do a shameless plug, it's available at Beaverdale Books and on Amazon. And I would encourage you to read it. It'll make you weep. It will make you laugh your ass off.
Well, thank you all for those powerful stories, short and powerful. So much there, where do you even start? So I'm going to give you a chance to think in the audience while I ask the first question, and then the second one is going to come from someone out here. So start thinking, and Jim will get you the microphone. So what comes to mind is, in each of your situations, it's all different and unique. You know, what was the impact on relationships of friends or peers, good and bad?
I don't have any impact, to be honest. I don't know how to answer that. Maybe it's because I'm just pretty unapologetic no matter what. And I think most of my friends, you know, have watched me through my adult life kind of dip in and out. I have the best circle right now that I've had in my entire life, hands down. And I think that kind of comes with age, where your circle gets a little bit smaller, yet it's large. My family relationships didn't necessarily suffer because of me, but once my child came out, I drew a very firm line in the sand with a lot of family members that I'll never choose you over my child. So I know a lot of people have issue with that because they think having such a hard line is not the way to go. But I think I've laid down so many boundaries once Sophie finally came out, and one little comment, one shameful this, one, I can't do that. I will choose my child over and over and over again. And I am a huge believer that chosen family is leaps and bounds the best family that I could ever have. They're not tied to me for any reason other than being chosen. And friends are essentially the same, but I don't feel like I've really had any impact. And if I have, I haven't noticed, nor do I care. Just if you don't have any time or space for who I am and what I stand for, that's okay. Wes said something really funny the other day about, I think it was bitches will chatter. It was something along those lines. That wasn't his words per se, but in my head I was like, yeah, and not productive and no time in my life. So I haven't had any. I'm sure that that's not the case for everyone else though.
Well, it sounds like you're actually being a powerful role model for others to be unapologetic and authentic, which is important, I think, for others to show that it's okay. It's okay to be you. So thank you.
I think it's interesting the initial reactions you get when you first come out, but also the reactions you get through the years. So when I have really great friends. I didn't have any issue with friends when I came out. The first person I told was my best friend, Courtney, from college. And she said, "You're either going to say you're gay or that you're in love with me." And I said, "I'm not in love with you." But yeah, so that was hilarious. But you know, I am engaged now, planning a wedding, and it's interesting the reactions you get when you kind of move your life forward in a very queer way, that other people may find uncomfortableness with. So, I mean, I've had very good reactions to that aspect of my life. And I've also had very not so good reactions to that aspect of my life. For example, I've had, you know, my grandpa say he can't come to my wedding, an aunt say they can't come to my wedding, my own sister can't come to my wedding because she can't, you know, witness vows between two men with her biblical faith. So there's, I just think the reactions are very interesting through the years as you kind of become more and more authentic. So both good and bad, but for the most part extremely good. I'm so happy with the way I'm living. So choosing what to move forward, take from my past, and choosing what to leave behind has been really cathartic. So
thank you, David. I know in my situation, when I came out late, retired Air Force General, I heard through the grapevine is that my former mentors and seniors were disappointed in me, and I'd let them down. Really, I'm me.
I think that that's like, that's really interesting as well. I have to kind of chuckle about when I came out to friends in high school, because of course, like, my then girlfriend was like, we're dating. And then also all of our friends were like, you're dating. Like, you know, like everyone was on the same page. So it was less of a coming out and more of like, okay, get with the program, Max. So that's kind of funny. And like all of my friends at the time were cisgender and straight, or they were out as cisgender and straight. Almost all of those people have come out as queer or trans, which is really, really beautiful to see through the years, the way that people come across that. But now as an adult, it's kind of interesting because my work outs me, right? Like I work at an LGBTQ organization. Anything that I'm doing with my professional and free time is gay, honestly. So as a result, whenever I'm entering a space, people know that I'm LGBTQ or queer. But very, very often my trans identity is erased because I don't look like a trans man, or I don't identify as a trans man. So it's really interesting to be in spaces that are focused on LGBTQ liberation and to be she, heard, and manned, even if I'm sharing name and pronouns, even if I'm being clear about the work that I do. And so I think that that can be challenging, because even though I'm out as queer because of the work that I do, I'm kind of always being like, I'm not actually a woman. But like most of the time when people are interacting with me, that's what they see. And so it does also tend to turn into conversations about gender and what that can look like, which luckily I'm paid to do anyway, which is really, really fun. I enjoy it. Like, listen, the amount of times I've talked to someone about gender in like the like checkout aisle at Hy-Vee, I'm like, listen, let's talk about it. And so I really enjoy that, but sometimes it can be challenging if I'm in an LGBTQ space and that part of my identity is erased, even with the work I do and the ways that I'm out. So that's kind of the fun part of, you know, the coming out in terms of like family, or sorry, friends and community, is that it's always just kind of reminding folks that there's so many ways to experience gender. We don't want to erase those ways when we're interacting with community members too. So.
It's interesting listening to the vocabulary that we now have. As an older gay man, somebody who came out to his first, his best friend in college before Stonewall, when I first came out, the only, lesbians and gay men did not associate together. We had separate bars, and very seldom would you see us mixing. And then the only thing you had to decide whether you were a top or a bottom. And, you know, and other people very often decided that for you. You know, somewhere along the line, I picked up the name Miss Moore. And at first I thought, oh my God, how did I get that? You know, am I that Nelly? And then all of a sudden it's like, well, you got it. You might as well make the most of it. You know, but to look at the history of it, you know, back then the only safe place we had to go and could hear about was a gay bar. And that's the only thing, you know, usually we practiced in coming out basically by going to the gay bar. You know, that was before you told family or before you told your best friend or whatever. That's what happened. You walked into a gay bar and it's like, oh, I'm comfortable now. And then you went on to tell your best friend the next month, hey, guess what I found out?
Thanks, Gary. Any questions or comments from the audience? Gary's broke the ice. Okay.
It was interesting when I was outed. I was very active in the Republican Party, and I assumed that my friends would still be my friends, and they weren't. I noticed that people would walk across the street if they were. I was walking toward them. They would cross the street and continue walking rather than see me. I was also a very active Mormon at the time, and I assumed that my Mormon friends would not accept my sexuality. And interestingly enough, my Mormon friends were the most accepting, the most embracing. And those friends have continued to be friends throughout my life for the next 30 years. And we talked together often. When I left the Mormon church, they were the most supportive of me because they understood exactly why I was leaving, and they've been very, very supportive of me. And so I think that was an interesting thing for me.
Thanks, Mike.
David, we've got a question here.
Not necessarily a question. It's a little bit of a comment here. So obviously I work in the state auditor's office and I'm the communications director, but my counterpart in Governor Reynolds' office is a gay man. And I find it so interesting, Mike, to hear your story, knowing that, you know, he and I spar back and forth, but it doesn't matter to the governor that she has a gay staffer working for her, right? So it's interesting. And then also the other interesting story I want to tell is the difference between, you know, I came out like 12, 13 years ago, and, you know, I'm in my early 30s, but my coworker who sits across from me in my office is, I found out like 2 weeks ago that he's gay, but he's a Gen Z person and just never thought that it was an interesting thing to have to tell someone. And he just casually mentioned, you know, I was on a date and then mentioned him. And I was like, it just kind of like made me turn my head because I didn't, you know, there were none of the I didn't suspect or whatever. And I just found it interesting. And I was like, so are you out? And he said, well, I don't really think that being out needs to be a thing. And I was just like, oh, and that was one of those, you mentioned those, what was it? The aha moments or the, you know, whatever. It was just one of those for me. And I just thought, you know, maybe I just need to stop thinking of it as a coming out constantly type scenario. So that just all I wanted
Thanks,
to say.
Thanks, DJ. Thank you. I know personally the coming out phrase I don't like. I like letting in. You choose to let somebody into your life at whatever level, and that happens all throughout your life on all types of things. And to me, coming out is more of a, we're letting in as I trust you, I care for you, I want you to know. Yes, Mr. Miller.
I think an important part about coming out is being authentic and knowing who you are to begin with. And that's what I noticed about all of you today. And the thing is that each one is so individual and the reactions are so individual that there's no knowing. So you're really always kind of treading on broken glass, so to speak. And I find it interesting how that changes over time and how maybe when you first realized you were gay, how you felt the need to tell somebody and who that first person was. So thank you for sharing all of that with us. My coming out was different than some because I came out to my parents and did not know or thought through anything about how do I do this? What do I say? What do I not say? Oh, and I made all the mistakes you could make. I had my mother crying herself to sleep at night, so it was not a good situation, but she came around. She within months, she was complimenting on how good looking my boyfriend was. So it's like, whoa. So I just thought, there's no book that's been written about how to come out that I know of. If there is, I'm not sure what it is. So thank you for being here.
Initially when I was looking at Sophie, the goal is to not have to come out, right? To just be able to be. Mm-hmm. And that drove me for the first few years to unlearn so many things. But the goal is to not have to come out. However, being visible is so important. So it's like this yes and thing that exists for me all the time. But I want to say in my, you know, untouchable world that no one should ever have to come out. But I've learned over the last several years how important it is actually, maybe not necessarily to come out, but to share your story. I'm a huge proponent of any kind of story being told because there's so much empathy lacking in our world. It is important to plug in your story somehow, whether it's in a conversation or online or some different platform that you have. But ultimately, my goal is no one has to come out. I know that's not reasonable, but I would love to see a world in my lifetime where that comment that was just made at the back table, it's not important. I do really believe that the generations under are at that stage where they're going to push that needle and the pendulum is going to swing and there will be no, that's a world I want to see before I'm not here anymore.
Thank you. Fortunately, there are some books that have been written. I know in my coming out process, if you could stack all the books physically that were in my Kindle, they'd probably go to about here to read everything I could. And I find those today, put them on my website, and actually folks hit that and use those as resources. And even a new one was written last year or this year called Coming True. And it's targeted for those coming out later in life. What's later? Later could be 20. In fact, let's do a quick thing. Let's do kind of by decades when folks came out, if that's okay. Who came out in their teens? Raise your hand. 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Okay, that was fun. I thought it was. Hopefully you looked around a bit. So a couple more questions. This has been fantastic. I have one question, which I'm not going to hit, but I think Gene has one. So.
Your individuality. How do you assimilate yourself into your community now? In other words, as a gay person, when I came out, I wanted to be around other gay individuals to affirm myself. And it's a struggle to find that community. At times, depending upon, I was a farmer. And so finding a community to belong to was a struggle. And I was wondering if you guys had any advice.
Yeah. I have some thoughts on this too. And one thing I wanted to speak to as well was your amazing story too about the separation between the gay and lesbian bars and how we have so many more words to describe ourselves. And also to your point about the story with your younger coworker. And some of the things that I think this actually comes up a lot when I provide like community education. That's one of my favorite parts of my job. And I think the interesting thing is, though I maybe use language that might feel like new or more new to a lot of you, like non-binary folks have existed since throughout the course of human history, right? A lot of the time when we look at these histories, when we talk about these terms, it'll feel really, really new, but that's because our communities and histories have been intentionally erased, right? So this is a really interesting thing when I work in this area, and I know that you are like so well-versed, but usually when I'm working with like cis and cisgender and straight individuals, they're like, wow, you all are just like making up new stuff every day, but we have these rich histories. I always think about like Two-Spirit Native and Indigenous people who are like can be part of the non-binary and trans umbrella, who have been on this land longer than most of us have been, right? So we want to like really honor those histories when we meet people coming out with terms we've never heard, and just remember that that's all a part of this larger need to try to silence and erase us. And also, I think what you said is beautiful, and what you said is beautiful. It'd be great if no one ever had to come out. But in this increasingly hostile state, we're kind of being forced to come out, right? It's no longer something that we can kind of do passively, because there are laws that are being passed that are taking away our autonomy and our agency. And being trans and being out as trans is now inherently political, because we're in an environment where it has to be. And so I think that's like, it's a very interesting turning point where more people than ever know and are comfortable with LGBTQ issues and topics, and also more people are being out and open and hostile to LGBTQ people. So it's just a very interesting time in history. But when it came to your question about like, being a part of a broader community, I think this has been really interesting. When my girlfriend informed me that I was LGBTQ, I didn't actually tell my parents and my family for a very long time, but I immediately started doing LGBTQ advocacy work. I'd always been an activist. And so I like hit the ground running. I worked with an organization some of you might remember called the Iowa Pride Network. That organization saved my life. I don't know that I would have made it to 18 without that organization. And so it's so funny, because realizing that I was gay and being a part of the community almost happened immediately, because I was like, oh, this is where I need to be. This is where I need to put my energy and attention. And as a person that was very, very depressed and anxious, LGBTQ advocacy work was the reason I woke up every single day. So to have a community of people that were doing that work alongside me just felt natural. And it's something I'm just very grateful for every day. So that's my experience of finding a spot in the community myself. So.
Thanks, Max. Last question from the audience. Last question, anybody? I'll give you all a few seconds if you have kind of a final thought or nugget you want to put out there. Like if someone listens to this later, a piece of information that might help them in their struggle or journey.
I'll start. And for me, coming out was difficult, but the hardest part was actually accepting myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's so important to learn to love the person that you see in the mirror. And I think that that's you'll never be able to have a relationship or to be active in the community until you learn to love that person that you see. And that would be my closing thought.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I can definitely echo that. And I want to just say thank you for that last question. I think assimilating into a community, especially an LGBTQ plus community, can be very difficult. But to echo what you just said, you have to absolutely love yourself and fully accept yourself, because when you do that, everyone else will just fall in love and accept you as well. And for example, I mean, ever since I came out 12 years ago, but I feel like I really started coming out a lot more authentically and happily 2 years ago. And I found a community here in Des Moines, which has been incredible. So I think it's definitely love yourself first, get yourself where you want to be and fully accept yourself, and everything else kind of just falls into line as far as community. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
Beautiful. Thank you, David.
Max should go last because Max... everything. I've learned so much from Max over the last 5 years, and I tell you this a lot, but I have learned so much from Max in the last few years. I don't know if I have any like great closing words. On the activist side, I know a lot of folks in this room are, we have some powerful voices. Activate. Now is the time, if you haven't, and I know we all have, you have to step into the ring and be loud and grab your neighbor and ask them to be loud with you, because we're about ready to step into another session that's going to be brutal. As far as, I don't know, words of wisdom, just take up space. The work we do at CCP, that's kind of been my mantra the whole 5 years I've been there, is create spaces. And I know it's kind of a cliche, but we're going to keep creating spaces and show folks that we can take up space. This is our home too. We deserve space, and you're not alone.
It's so funny that you say that, because I also learned so much from you. So listen, just a lot of really good love there. But I think one of the things I think a lot about is how so many folks have come out throughout their lives. A lot of you have been out for as long as I've been alive. And I know that I stand on your shoulders, right? Like, that history is really beautiful. And I would really say to build on what Hillary said, we really do need you to be loud, and we need you to be loud about things that don't directly impact you. I'll never forget how disheartening it was earlier this year when the gender affirming care ban was dropped in the Iowa legislature. That now has been signed into law. That ban has robbed people under the age of 18 for gender affirming care that is life saving. And when I went to panels and answered questions, the number one question I got was about the rumored and introduced bill that would overturn marriage equality. That bill was intentionally, rumored and brought out because they wanted to distract from what was happening to trans kids. Trans people are the most marginalized in our community. Black, Indigenous, and people of color that are trans are the most marginalized in our community. Trans kids are marginalized in our community. They are going after kids first. And it was really shocking and disheartening that the only thing people wanted to talk about was marriage equality. I heard crickets from many cisgender, gay, lesbian, and bisexual people about trans issues and the fact that we're dying, we're having to leave the state, we can't access gender-affirming care, and we're being targeted, and the conversation went back to marriage equality, right? I'm not saying marriage equality is not important, right? But it was an intentional distraction, right? And so I think all of these things have to come together. There's no scarcity mentality here when we talk about liberation. And so I really, really hope that you all, and I know many of you are, but when you get engaged in this work, it's not just because it's going to impact your bottom line, but because it's going to impact the most marginalized of all of us. And so it's just that quote, right? Like, none of us are free until all of us are free. And that is true, because they're going to come for trans kids. They're going to come for trans adults. They're going to come for gay, lesbian, and bisexual, cisgender people. And so we want to be viewing this as like a whole effort and movement, right? So I just ask y'all to like step in the ring, have these conversations with your peers and your community members, because it makes a huge difference. We need our LGBTQ advocates and elders in the space as well. And many of you are as well. So of course I want to give credit where credit is due, but I really just hope that you tune in, not just when it impacts you, but when it's going to impact the people that are going to get hurt the most. So that's my final thought.
I want to thank each of you for being here today and having the courage to share your story. I really appreciate it. And I think the theme I took away is your courage, unity, and authenticity are the foundation. And we're in the right space, right time for us. And together, we need to come together to continue that. So it's that for others as well. So thank you for your stories today. Fantastic. Glad you're here today.